What am I going to do with you? I think I have a good idea. And he introduced me to Atreya Rishi Prabhu, who was at that time the head of the Iran Yatra. So they sent me off to Iran. They banished me to Iran, where I had a wonderful experience. Perhaps the most joyful time of my entire off and on devotional career was in Iran, where by day I was a teacher of acupuncture to Iranian physicians at the Bimaristan Reza Pahlavi, which was the hospital connected with the Iranian medical university. And by night, I was maitre d' in this extraordinarily successful Govinda's restaurant. Some nights we would have lines going out the door to the gate, down the alleyway, around the corner, down one block, and around the corner again, of Indians and Iranians and foreigners of all kinds, because Atreya Rishi Prabhu, a Harvard MBA, ran the only CPA firm in all of Iran that was authorized to do taxes for foreign firms. So every foreign entity, every foreign company, corporation that did business in Iran had to do business with Atreya Rishi. So his network of connections was extraordinary. Bell Helicopter, GE, I mean, every corporation was. And Paribrajakacharya Swami, who was a spiritual head of the community, who now you can find on the internet under Richard Freeman, who probably one of the most famous Hatha Yoga teachers in the world right now, was P. Swami, we call him, Paribrajakacharya Swami, was the spiritual head. He was a Hatha Yogi who could do every trick in the book. I mean, open a light on yoga to any page and say, do that, and he could do it. He was a personal yoga instructor to the Empress of Iran. And I heard that when I think I better not repeat that unsubstantiated rumor. At any rate, he was in fact the personal yoga instructor to the Empress of Iran and could sing like a Gandharva. And so the royal family had outfitted our Govinda's restaurant with new furniture. We had original BBT artwork. You know, the original Butter Thief with Krishna sitting on the parquet floor, and baby Krishna sitting on the parquet floor eating butter. That was hung in our restaurant. The one where Mother Jashoda is coming around the corner with a whip in her hand and Krishna's grabbing butter and giving it to Balaram, who's feeding it to the monkeys. That original was in our restaurant. Beautiful restaurant. And I was really enjoying my service there. And then Srila Gurudev called. And he said, I want you to come to Bombay. I go. So I said, okay. So I left Iran, fortunately perhaps, 1 week prior to the Abadan movie house arson, in which more than 100 people died, and the Shah's forces blamed the Ayatollah, and the Ayatollah blamed the Shah, and nobody knew who really did it, but it was the beginning of the end of the Shah in Iran. And so of course it was beginning of the end of ISKCON in Iran too, at least for that period of history. So at any rate, I arrived in Bombay, and I have heard and read various versions of this story, but I want to share with you the version that I heard upon my arrival in Bombay, which was told to me by one of the men who was in the party that was walking with Srila Gurudev that morning when Gopinath, he called him at first, or little Lord Ramadar appeared on the beach in Juhu. So Srila Gurudev and his party were walking on the beach, and suddenly Gurudev stopped and said, "What's that?" "What's what?" Srila Gurudev, "That shining in the sand up there." Nobody could see, so they continued walking. And he stopped again and said, "Well, no, what is that thing right there?" Nobody could see what he was referring to. So he sent a devotee forward to look for what he was seeing that no one else could see. And the devotee couldn't even... Tamal Gurudev was giving him direction, "Oh, further back this way, right there." And finally this devotee does see something in the sand, and he digs his hand into the sand, and then he begins to dance because he found this extraordinary deity of Krishna. How many of you have seen that deity personally? How many of you have seen pictures of it? You know what I'm talking about? If you've not seen a photograph of this deity, there's some nice photographs on the net of the little Radha Damodar, it is called now. And so Srila Gurudev had called me from Iran because at that time I was his... I think at that time I was his only male-initiated Brahmin, second-initiated disciple. I had taken initiation from Srila Prabhupada previously, and then the following year, second initiation from Srila Gurudev. And so I came to be the first regular pujari for little Damodar. Again, I'll call him Gopinath because that was the name that Srila Gurudev was using at that time. And that was also my first experience of intimate, regular, daily, close contact with Srila Gurudev. Was it ever demanding? Because he was totally focused on service to this deity. He felt that Krishna had appeared to him in this special form, this perfect for a sannyasi, portable deity form, and that it was his duty to make it wonderful for this deity. So I was there when the Maharaj of Jaipur. I think it was Maharaj of Jaipur. Some Maharaj of Sampur came to see Srila Gurudev and agreed to make a golden Radharani to go along with Gopinath, and it was intense because everything had to be perfect. Of course, as you know, for Srila Gurudev, everything has to be perfect anyway, all the time, but for this deity, it was especially important that everything be perfect. I mean, you couldn't be 3 seconds late with an offering. You had to count down your watch to the offering time to start ringing the bell, you know. And then that wasn't the only service I had either. He had me doing other things. So sometimes it would be like 3 minutes till time to start ringing the bell for an offering, and I'm still up in his quarters, and the prasadam is down in the kitchen, and it seemed like it was 3 stories down to the kitchen. I'd run down the kitchen, grab the offering, run back up, and get it on the plane. He only made me better. Than I ever thought I could be. He only pressured me to be faster, to be more efficient, to be more excellent, than I myself could ever have imagined myself to be. He taught me pranayama. I was getting ready to rush out to go downstairs to get a plate for Gopinath. And he said, "Lomashrishi." I stopped. He said, "Breathe out." I went, "Ah." He said, "Breathe in. Now go." So that little piece of pranayama I've been able to call upon many times in my life since then. When I get stressed out, I just remember. And then go. Things go much smoother. I don't know whether these, in fact, I'm sure these recollections now are not necessarily coming in chronological order, but I'm just going to let them flow up as they come. I continued my service pretty much wherever I want as an acupuncturist and doctor to the devotees. And especially whenever we were in India together, whenever I was in India with Srila Gurudev, there was always other dignitaries there, ISKCON, GBC, and other people. And so I had opportunity to massage or render, you know, somehow treat most of the GBC and other dignitaries. And one time in Mayapur, there was a building in Mayapur that was still under construction, and yet for some reason it was already a thoroughfare. People were going and coming through the halls of this building, and there were rooms off of the halls that were still mud floors. They hadn't even put in the floor yet. And on that particular day, I had already seen three or four devotees, and Jayaprataka Swami and Bhavananda and three or four of these people I'd worked with already. And I was rushing from one to another, and I passed through the Gurudev on one of these corridors, and he said, "Lomashrishi," put on the brakes, "where are you going?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to see such and such a Maharaj." And he said, this smile spread over his face. This radiant, satisfied smile spread over his face, and he said, "Go and serve the devotees." And he walked on. I had to step off into one of these rooms with no floor. I mean, it had a floor, but it was made of mud. Fortunately, it wasn't muddy. It was just dirt. And I just had to step off into there and cry for the joy that I felt welling up in my soul from seeing the smile on his face. One other time I had been so affected by a smile. It was Srila Prabhupada's smile. I think it was a day or two after my first initiation. Prabhupada wasn't coming down to the temple much, but that particular morning he came down. This was in the spring of 1977. Of course, Prabhupada left the planet in November of 1977, so he was quite frail even at that time. He came down from Mangalartik and circumambulated the temple, and then he stopped and turned and smiled. And the room erupted with joy because everyone in the room must have felt the joy that I felt at Srila Prabhupada's smile. So, through the authorized Guru Parampara, somehow or another, His Divine Grace Tamal Krishna Goswami Gurudev had inherited the smile power of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. He didn't like my massage, Gurudev. Most people love my massage. Most people in Japan, they say I have Goddo Hanzu, which just means something like, you know, the hands of God or the power of God in your hands, or I don't know, something like that. Most people really enjoy receiving massage. Gurudev hated my massage. You know, I thought I was pretty good at it, you know, but he's, no, your hands are too hot, Lama Shrishi, get out of here. Anyway, on a number of occasions, he was kind enough to invite me back to his personal service, even though in every case, I was not able to sustain that service for very long. It was just so intense. I just reached a point where I'd go to him and say, Gurudev, I can't take it anymore. And he'd always say, okay, Lama Shrishi, where will you go? Well, I'll go to Japan or Taiwan or Hawaii or wherever I felt like going at that time. I was blessed to be transcriptionist for not all of, but a good portion of Jagannath Priyanatikam. In those days, didn't really have laptops. The smallest, you know, computer that time was IBM XT, which had a box about this big, you know. And of course, a cathode ray screen. They didn't have flat panel displays. So to carry that box and a monitor around the world was a jugga. But that was part of my service, to carry a computer, keyboard, and monitor around the world. And then Srila Gurudev would dictate, and I would transcribe. So I was fortunate to be really the first to know the conclusion of that book. And he was kind enough to put a little, he mentioned my name there in the credits. That was very sweet. It was in Fiji where he was during part of that transcription that I first had the pleasure of meeting Nityananda Prabhu. And I appreciated Nityananda immediately and still do. I had lunch with him today. Well, how blessed you are, I think, to have such a devotee as your temple president. There are other memories that I could pull up, but probably I've talked a long time. I'll be happy to take some questions if anybody wants to ask me any questions. Yes, Prabhu.
When they found Jaladamodar Gopika?
Yes.
In the sand? Was he in the water at all or just in the dry sand?
My sense of it was in a place where the waves were, you know, coming up and receding so that the sand was wet. That's the image that I created. Now, I don't know if that's actual. That was the image that I got the first time I heard the story.
Mm-hmm. You described it today, actually, in the Krishna Kitha. I think it was the story, and they were saying a few days later, or sometime later, Shrivar had changed the name, and he polished the deity for like 6 hours. Were you there at that time?
Well, You know, it took from the time that he, from the time the deity appeared to him until the time I arrived from Iran, I think it was probably about 2 weeks. So I don't know. I don't know anything about what happened in that interim. But when I got there, Gopinath was already silver. You know, so perhaps that had taken place already. And I don't know when he changed the name to Damodar, but it was not. It was, and that's when I heard that news later. It was a surprise to me. So it wasn't during the time that I was there. And also, I did not. I had already left that service prior to the arrival of Srimati Radharani too. I later saw Radha Damodar together for the first time in Hong Kong some years later.
I remember once when Srila Gurudev actually came to Tennessee to Jivananda Prabhu was living in Chattanooga and I was living in Nashville, and Radhanath Prabhu and myself. And so when they left Chattanooga, they got all the way to Nashville, to Nashville to our house, and then it was Drishtadyumna Maharaj at that time. You remember Drishtadyumna Maharaj?
Sure.
He had forgotten Radha Damodar and left them in Chattanooga. Srila Gurudev was just, he was so upset. And he sent him back immediately, and he paced that whole time, never stopped pacing the whole time until the deities got there. You know, it was like, he was just...
Boy, I wouldn't want to hear what Drishtadyumna heard after that.
It's a good thing Drishtadyumna was a Maharaj, otherwise you probably would.
I heard His Grace Narottam and Ananda Prabhu told me that Srila Gurudev told him about Radha Damodar, that Srila Gurudev said that he realized that he could get so into taking care of that deity that he could sort of lose himself. He said something like that, that the amount of effort that he could put in was unlimited, that he realized that he couldn't do too much for Radha Damodar, and that he just, you know, could get lost in their worship.
Well, I think that was the mood that he was in when I arrived. And in fact, during my entire tenure there, which wasn't very long, because he was so... I can remember Gopal Krishna Maharaj coming and saying, I think it was Gopal Krishna, he still had been a householder at that time. Anyway, Gopal Krishna was also GBC in India, and he kept coming and knocking on the door, and when are you going to do this, and when are you going to do that? Get out of here, you know. So, he was completely into it. That deity is really special. When I think of that deity, I think of, you know, he's playing the flute and one of his hands is still has damage. You know, the fingers sort of are missing from one hand. But at least at that time, it had been painted over in red. And somehow or another, I always felt a special softness about that. In my heart, there was a special softness because of Krishna's, but because of that part where it looked like it might have hurt Krishna, you know, it gave rise to a special sweetness of the rasa, the mellow of service.
Can I make a comment? I'd rather ask you more questions, but since we brought up Radha Damodar, I got to be the pujari during Kartik right after I got second initiation here in Dallas. I went to Austin and got the deities and brought them up because Sankarshan and his wife were going to India.
Sure.
So I was there. I did everything morning and evening. And we were doing full dressing, and we'd place them on the altar, and then I'd come at night and do the night outfit. And by the end of that time, I was like soaring. You know, I was feeling so much love for the deity, and I had given so much of my time. And it was like really a yagya, because it was like every day, I mean, morning and evening, intense. And I had no idea it was going to be like that, but it really cemented my desire to do deity worship. And when I got done, the Sankarshan and Mother Vishnu Priya came back to Austin, and they were gonna. They come up to get the deities and bring them back. They said they couldn't come. They asked if I could drive them down to Austin, so I said sure. And the last morning, I bathed and dressed them, and I didn't place them on the altar, but I felt real emotional, and it all started to come to me what they had done for me, and. As I was packing them up, it was cold, so I pulled the car into the back, and I turned the heat on, and I got the seat ready for them. And they had a special travel altar with Srila Prabhupada and Panchatattva picture. And so I placed them carefully, blue tacked, tied them down, and opened the car door and brought them out and placed them in. And I felt real emotional and a little teary. And I closed the door to go around the car and get in and start driving. And as I closed the door, I looked down on the ground, and there was this little ring sitting there. And it was a child's ring. It was made of plastic, but in the center was this little red heart. And so I knew that it was theirs. They had given that to me. They were reciprocating and saying, you know, thank you. So I was like, I felt real emotion, more emotional. And I just knew that that was there from them. So I got in the car, and we had a wonderful drive down, just me and the deities. And I played some bhajans and nice music. And it was just so amazing to have their... Shri Radha Kalachan Ji Ki? Yeah. But I apologize for telling my story, because I'd like to hear more from you. But it's such amazing. They are such a sweet deities, and that's made my whole devotional life now. Want to do deity, and I've been lucky enough to do deity worship for a long time since then. And one other quick thing about them: before I brought them to Dallas, I drove them to my brother's house in like West Austin, and to give my brother Darshan with his wife. They were having trouble selling their house, and had been on the market for a long time. After they got Darshan and Radha down there, their house sold immediately.
Wow. Yeah, it's... I mean, I'm sure there must be others who can tell miracle stories. I mean, the appearance story in itself is such a miraculous story, and yes, indeed, it is possible to lose yourself in that service and become overwhelmed.
Actually, the sun was setting on one side of the ocean, and the moon was on the other side.
Thank you for reminding me of that important point of the story, and that all the demigods are present, I was told that first night, and that the Chandra and Surya and also the rain, it was misting rain, so all the demigods are present for the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that morning. Any other questions or stories? If anyone else has a Srila Gurudev personal experience that they'd like to share, it'd be a good time to do it.
I just was remembering when we were talking about how serving Srila Gurudev was very intense, that he would go off. This was kind of his home base, and then he would go traveling, and he would take a servant with him, sometimes a servant and a secretary. And when he would come back, he would be... you know, fresh like a rose, and the servant, the secretary would just be like rags. They're like, so he'd change them out, get two more, and then head out again.
Yeah, he'd come back to Dallas to change personnel, right? Yeah. But as I said, I can remember, it was the third or fourth time that I contacted him from some place in the world and said, would you take me back into your service? And he said, sure. And so I came to Dallas. And the very first night I was here, I made some what I consider to be insignificant error. You don't deserve to be in my service. And I was on the floor and I'm thinking to myself, you got that right, bub. But then, you know, moments later, I realized how fortunate I was, because I learned from him excellence. Not that I'm excellent by any stretch of the imagination, but I learned what attentiveness is. I learned what focus is. Oftentimes I pray to Gurudev for, oh, if you could just make me a little bit capable of management the way you are, sort of thing, you know. I've never been in a circumstance since being in his personal service where I had a boss or a teacher or any person that I was supposed to do something for that I didn't know how to satisfy, you know, because I learned to some extent how to satisfy a very, very demanding mentor by concentration, attentiveness, and seriousness and surrender.
Some of the devotees spoke about how they felt after Srila Gurudev left that he was able to do more for them in a way, that he was even more empowered to help us.
You mean to say the devotees felt that they were more empowered, or that Srila Gurudev was somehow working through them more?
Srila Gurudev, yeah, was getting even more done. Did you feel that way?
His quarters, you still, mm-hmm. you know, you feel his presence so much mm-hmm. up there. But we had the Vyasa Puja yesterday in Houston, and I told a story about how Bhakti Charu Maharaj was describing Srila Gurudev's personality, and he was saying it was like a thunderstorm, like we have these Texas thunderstorms. He said when it comes through, it's like thunder, lightning, hail, and you think the world's going to come to an end. And then the next minute, it's all peace and serene, like you were saying, yes. You know. Mm-hmm. And I was telling a story of, there was one, do you know Arjuna Krishna? Do you know?
Arjuna Krishna?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, he was serving Srila Gurudev, and I was up there also, and he did something that Srila Gurudev didn't like. I forgot what it was, but Srila Gurudev got very upset at him, and he told him, he said, you know, You get out of here. I don't want to see your face again. I want you to get out of here right now. Just leave. So he left, and then 5 minutes later, Srila Gurudev called me in and said, call Arjuna. And I said, well, he's gone, Srila Gurudev. And he said, how could he possibly go and leave me like that, you know? So, it's like Srila Gurudev's anger, he used in Christian service, and it could just be like the world's coming to an end, and then, you know, 10 minutes later, it's mm-hmm. just completely calm and serene, you know, so yeah, it was amazing. Gopal has an amazing story about it. We got a lot of amazing ones, right?
This is, well, yeah, we were out on the farm in Oklahoma, and every morning we did everything in a back porch at the upper house. You remember?
Yes, I do. I was fortunate to be there once or twice.
So, we had breakfast. We had class every morning. It was all screened. The whole porch had huge screens, so it was dark, and we'd have class, and it was in the wintertime we were building. We had maybe 20 men were out there. I don't know if there were any women there at all. Maybe one. Yeah, it was all men working on the building the apartment complex. So we had class on the back porch. Gurudev spent about a month at a time out there. And, you know, it was always dark. We had one little light bulb in the back. So, you know, the modes were kind of, we were all pretty young. And so there was a lot of devotees falling asleep. When he would be giving class, and first he would have, I remember he would tell the devotee, okay, stand up against the wall. So the devotee would stand up, and then he'd start falling asleep standing up. He'd say, good, now stand on one leg. And
you can fall down from one leg if you're sleepy enough.
And there was another, and we used to make recordings. Jagat Paul, God brother of mine, he was, he would sit right next to Srila Gurudev, and he had a little tape, cassette tape recorder, and he was making the recordings. So Srila Gurudev was giving class one morning, and he paused for a moment in his speaking, and you could hear some snoring going on right next to him. And Gurudev turns, you know, how Gurudev gives that look, you know, like, you know, look at this guy right next to me. And he says, Jagat Paul, wake up. And Jagat Paul wakes up, and Srila Gurudev says, what are you doing? You're sitting right next to me. I'm giving class, and you're falling asleep. And he said, well, I'm just really tired. He says, yeah, well, and Srila Gurudev said, oh, the sages in Namasharanya, they stayed awake for 7 days? Mm-hmm. 7 days a night, listening to Bhagavatam, and you can't stay awake for 30 minutes? And Jagat Paul looked at Srila Gurudev and says, yeah, but I'll bet the sages in Namasharanya didn't have to do construction work. I've got a big laugh out of that. Oh, great.
Speaking of the sages of Namasharanya, puts me in mind of Jaipur. Immediately after, I think it was immediately after our second initiation, or at any rate, at one point when Srila Gurudev and I were in India together, we went to Jaipur with Bhavananda and, not Bhavananda, Bhagavan. Bhagavan and Indradyumna Maharaj, who was, I don't think Indradyumna was a sannyasi at that time. And we took darshan of the deities in Jaipur, and then we went to Rishikesh and went out into the hinterlands along the banks of the Ganges, the high, you know, the sources of the Ganges. And I've always been a Mayavadi tinged personality type, so I had hiked maybe 100 yards upstream from where all the devotees were. All the devotees, that means Srila Gurudev, Bhagavan, and Indradyumna. And I had gotten into the Ganges, submerged myself in the ice. And you could still see some springtime ice flows coming down the river. And I was getting down into the river, you know, just doing my body tapasya, seeing how long I could stay underwater. And I came back to where they were, and my body was like pink from top to bottom. And she said, oh, Srishi, what have you been doing? Have you been sitting in the water? And I said, yes, Srila Gurudev. He shook his head. He didn't say out loud, Loma Srishi, what am I going to do with you? But that was the meaning again. He didn't scold me, though. Sometimes I can still use that recollection. If I went to shake myself into alertness. I just remember how cold it was in the Ganges in Rishikesh.
It was so nice you mentioned Gurudev's smile and really put it into perspective that he had inherited Prabhupada's smile power.
Yes.
And he started using that on me pretty early. And it really did affect us, you know. It's like he could disarm you with a smile.
Totally.
And enliven you with it. One time he was chastising me. I was driving for him in Cambridge. And he was just on me. I had been trying to,
you know, manage the house myself. We were staying at Willow House. And so I wanted to get flowers for the deities because Gaur Purnima was coming up. So I was trying to arrange it. And he didn't like that I was trying to manage. And it was my false ego. But he was just right. He had to go to a special kind of a massage therapist, a real specialist back. Mm-hmm. And so on the way there, Gurudev was just giving me the sauce. Why are you trying to rule a house? What do you think? Because you're in a white body and they're Indians and you think you're in charge and you're trying to... And I'm like, wow, you know. So he was like, okay, here, this phone's not working. Get it working. You know, find out why it's not working. You know, call so-and-so. Where's so-and-so? And I don't know where she is. And I'm waiting for Shama Shaki. So he goes in to have his massage work. And I'm trying to get the phone working, nothing happens. He comes in and he goes, whoa, you know, that doctor, he was a little hard on me, you know? And I'm thinking, ew.
I know the feeling.
You deserve it, you know, you were right for me. And he kind of looked at me like he could tell, you know, that I was feeling that way. And then he started in on me again. He goes, okay, drive me to my school. Let's drive there. So we're driving and he's just riding me. So we pull up to Clare College, which is his school. And he rolls down the window. He sees a friend. He goes, hey, Raul. So he calls this gentleman over, and he's talking and saying, I want you to come to lunch, and what are you doing? And Gurudev's in the back seat, and I'm in the driver's seat, and I'm still shaking, you know, from the chastisement. And Gurudev reaches and squeezes my shoulder, and everything just went away, all the anxiety, and I just was like, it felt so good. And I just turned, I smiled at the guy, I said, hello. But he had that power in his smile power and his power over, you know, to be so like a thunderbolt, like a rose. Mm-hmm. And it was like so sweet, you know. And even though you were getting corrected and chastised, you still wanted more and more and more of that association.
Yes, indeed. Well, I kept wanting more. I mean, I kept asking for opportunities, and he kept granting them, and I would come into his service for a period of time, usually not a very long period of time, and I remember why I didn't stay so long the last time. And I'd say, Srila Gurudev, I'm burnt out. And he'd say, okay, Lama Srishi, where will you go? And I would go. And he was kind enough to have that relationship with me over many years. And the last time that I had his personal darshan, he had, I think it was prior to his surgery. He had a surgery. Just before that surgery, I came here and he invited me to dinner. And I had never sat at table with him. I'd always served him prior to that, which is also marvelous. But to sit at table with him, I mean, there were times in Hong Kong where I would sit together on the floor with he and other devotees. Yeah, but I mean, to sit at a table and be served, really, you know, to be a guest in that sense was my first experience at that. And it was another rasa. It was a different... You know, of course, I have the incredible good fortune of being both his god brother and his disciple. And yes, that's something I want to mention. It seems that there is some opinion that those who are second initiated by Srila Gurudev and first initiated by Srila Prabhupada are not really Gurudev's disciples. They're his god brothers. And if someone wishes to adhere to that opinion, they have, you know, I'm not going to object to that. But my instruction from Srila Gurudev was that I was both disciple of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami and Tamalkrishna Goswami. And I embrace that honor. Stand ready to challenge anyone who would challenge that I'm indeed a disciple of Tamalkrishna Goswami. So I've had the good fortune to serve him in various capacities on numerous occasions, and I did have that one opportunity to be his guest at table, which if you ever wish to experience the luxuriousness of being a guest of honor. Be a guest of Gurudev. I'm pretty much storied out. I could tell so many mundane things, but you've probably all had those experiences. So let me once again ask if there are any questions or if anyone else wants to contribute a recollection, please do so, otherwise I'll just wrap it up at this time.
Okay, just to keep it going, until somebody else thinks of something. there was one time, this is also on our farm in Oklahoma, we had the upper house. Srila Gurudev was there. He stayed in the upper house. I stayed in the upper house on the front. And there was a little tiny room that we used for an office. It was like a front enclosed, almost like a porch, but it was tiny. And I had my sleeping bag, and I always slept there. And we had on the farm, it was warm enough weather. We had the scorpions were, you know, out of hibernation or whatever. And so you always had to look out for scorpions. So I was sleeping. I was falling asleep one night in my sleeping bag. Srila Gurudev was already in his room to take rest. And I had this, something appeared in my mind of a scorpion coming at me. And I snapped awake. And, you know, I turned on the light and I looked all around. I couldn't see anything. But okay, you know, I just, dreaming. And so I went back to sleep. And as soon as I was entering that sleep stage again, the same thing happened. This happened like three times. And the third time I woke up, and Srila Gurudev was calling from his room, "Gopal, Gopal." So I went to his room, and he had the light on. He was out of his bed, and he said, "I think I just got stung by a scorpion."
Wow.
And so he said, "Look under my sheets." So I pulled open the sheet, and there was a scorpion. And, you know, I brushed it onto the ground. He said, "Kill it." He said, "You can, you know," he attacked me. "You kill it." He said, "Take my boot and smash him." So I proceeded to smash him. And then, he said, "So what's going to happen?" He stung me. And I said, "Well, I've always heard that they're not so poisonous here in Oklahoma," but he said, "But how poisonous are they? What, I mean, is it like a bee sting? Is it more than that? What is it exactly?" So, "Well, let me call up Maturapati." You remember the devotee? He was out there a long time. And so I called Maturapati, and he wasn't, you know, exactly sure, because nobody had never been stung amongst us. So I asked him to call the Durant Hospital to get, you know, any detailed information. And in the meantime, Srila Gurudev was lying in bed, and we were waiting for Maturapati's return call. And he started he was talking about, Maturnath was telling yesterday of how there were certain instances when Srila Gurudev would go back, and like when he was on some medication this one time, he was telling Maturnath these childhood pastimes or childhood memories. So he was doing the same thing
when he was when we were waiting for the doctor to call, and he started telling me things, which I don't recall everything, but I remember one thing in particular, how he was afraid of needles when he was a child. And when his mother would take him to get shots for school, he said he was telling me how one time he was waiting, and when the nurse came with the needle, he passed out. And because he just had this thing, he just didn't like the needles coming at him. And then he would stop speaking. He would say, now he was describing how he could feel the poison from that scorpion, you know, coming up his leg. And, you know, I mean, he was very sensitive. He could feel the different things like that. But anyways, that was, it turned out, you know, it was like a bee sting, more or less. But that was one incident that I could remember on our farm.
Well, thank you, Gopal. There was something that you said there that put me in mind of one other story that I'd like to share. That was in Fiji. Fiji was not only the place where I first met why can't I call the name of your presence who I just mentioned a moment ago? I'm sorry? Yes, Nityananda, thank you. I first met Nityananda there. I also first met Shankarshan there. And one day Srila Gurudev wanted to go swimming. So we went swimming on this beach, beautiful white sand beach, and the sun was just fierce. And there was a coconut tree right nearby where we were. And Srila Gurudev said, oh, it'd be nice to have a coconut. So I said, Srila Gurudev, would you like me to get a coconut for you? He said, Lamashrish, you can't get one of those. That's way up there. You can't get that. I said, oh, yes, I can. He said, okay, show me. So fortunately, I've lived in Hawaii, and I'd seen it done, and I had some idea how to scale a coconut tree, so I was able. Actually, it was more of a challenge than I thought it was. I got about halfway, and I thought, oh, what am I into here? But I did make it up, and fortunately, all you have to do is just get a good hold of them, and they'll come off. And so I knocked two coconuts to the floor, to the ground, and I got a smile from Gurudev that time, too, but it was a different kind of smile. It wasn't a smile that filled you with spiritual bliss. You know, it was a smile that was like you get from a chum, you know, that you just challenged to some insignificant, mundane foot race or something and beat him. You know, it was very, very satisfying nonetheless.
I once tripped. I was in Cambridge.
Srila Gurudev had this couple over. They were professors at Cambridge in some capacity, and they were very elderly, and they're very sweet, and they love Gurudev, and they're really, Gurudev loved them. So they had dinner, and they were sitting in Gurudev's living room, and Gurudev was relaxed, and they were speaking, and Gurudev was speaking, and they asked me about something, and I came in, and I had to walk around the sofa, and I tripped on the stairs and almost fell into this glass end table. But I righted myself and kept up. And Gurudev saw me as I was doing it, and he gave me a look like, oh, you just made it, you know, and a big smile. But he understood that I'd almost really messed up. But he wasn't upset. It was a sweet thing. And I'll never forget his expression, how he was like that. And there's one other thing about that couple. They would sometimes pick Srila Gurudev up and drive him places in Cambridge. And so they would drive really, really slow. I mean, like 20 miles an hour was their top speed. And Gurudev just, I mean, he never went that slow. You know, he was very in control. When you were driving, he was watching what you're doing. He was telling you where to go, you know, change, turn, you know, drive faster, drive slower, get in that lane. You know, you get in one lane in rush hour traffic or heavy traffic, why aren't you in that lane? It's going faster. Well, you get in that lane and slow down. Oh, why did you get in this lane? You should have stayed in that lane. But he said of his experience driving really slowly with that couple that he said he got a new perspective on the world, on driving, because he'd had to drive so slowly that he said he saw things that he'd never seen before. That was a whole new experience, driving really, really slowly. So I thought that was interesting. Gurudev could appreciate that, and that he drove real hard, everything he did, and he drove us hard, but he understood what was behind it. You know, he wasn't just doing it because to do it. He knew what was behind it. He understood things. It's interesting.
And when you talk about the things that endeared you to him, when his smile, and I'm thinking of he could put you through so much intensity. Well, I think it was either 1980 or 81. I believe it was 1980 when I went to Hong Kong and spent a couple of months. And I was more or less his personal servant and the temple commander and the temple president and the, BBT accountant. And, I had to make all the arrangements for all the devotees from the moment, from waking them up to the moment they went out to do what they had to do, and then run all of the errands for Gurudev and do all the boga shopping and all that. So it was very intense because I was coming off of our farm in Oklahoma. And in Oklahoma, you milk the cow.
Right.
You take prasad, you go out and do some labor, and you breathe the fresh air, and it's pretty mellow. You don't have anybody. Well, it was like going from, it was a heavy-duty cooker. And plus, Gurudev had my own little office, and he had like a hotline number to my, and it constantly, I was going out of my office, round through the temple room, into his room, and it was, everything was very intense. And he had so many names he was calling me at the top of it. It was extreme intensity for me. And plus it was like 100 degrees. We had no air conditioning. When we couldn't bring any dhotis or anything. So when we got there, there was a devotee who had a cloth. His parents had a cloth shop. He told the devotee, get the right sizes for us and have them make dhotis and kirtas. So when we were in the temple compound, we always wore dhotis and kirtas. He said, but not cotton. You have to get polyester because I don't want anybody wasting any time ironing. So it's like, 95 degrees. It's like the same climate as Houston. Muggy. And, we're sitting in polyester. So, not only do you have the intensity, you're already sweating from that, but then it's, you're very uncomfortable. I'm from the north, so it's even
more. Polyester won't absorb any perspiration.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, it was very intense. And, but then there were times when he would personally, maybe once a week, he would have to go downtown and have a meeting with some important person or something like that. And at those times, we never left the place in dhotis. We always had to wear suit and tie and things like that whenever we left. Very respectable. So when he was ready to go, he had a couple of suits, and then it was always, his whole mood changed. While he was working throughout the day, it was very intense, but when it came time to leave, his mood became very enthused, and now I get to go out in the field and I'm going to do something and meet people. And he was always, tell me, pick out what should I wear, how does this go with my suit and this and that. He'd set his papers in his little briefcase and walk him to the elevator, and he would just be in total bliss.
I ever saw him in a suit.
Well, it was an amazing thing. And I of course, just like a servant, I walked to the elevator with him carrying his briefcase. He would get in, and I'd hand him his briefcase, and he would just look at me, like, how do I look, and a big beam, gleam on his face, beaming smile, and then the elevator would close. And I remember always running to the balcony, waiting to see him come out from underneath the building. And without fail, every time he'd come walking out, he'd just like at a fast pace, and he'd always turn around and wave, then walk up to the curb and, right immediately, as if, somebody had called beforehand, which he never did. A taxi would always pull up right when he got to the curb, and there he was off. But those moments like that, were what got you through all the everything else that was so intense.
And the thing is, it didn't take many moments like that. It seems to me it only took one smile or one word of encouragement or one acknowledgement of a job well done to fire you up for a lot more of
Yeah, I was telling yesterday how also in Hong Kong when you know, it was very intense, and I mean it you know, I practically every night I would go to bed I had this heavy anxiety and headache and everything else, and I wake up feeling the exact same way. And my day started, I mean, I did, you know, I thought, well, at least I'll have a couple hours to chant some japa, but it was never like that. You might chant 10 or 15 minutes and you were going. Here they've already had you going. So I remember at the end when Srila Gurudev was going to submit some papers or try to get some legalization for the mission there, you know, he called all the devotees to his room one by one to tell us, you know, give us the news and say some personal things. And when I went to his room, he started to really thank me. And he was so great, you know, expressing so much gratitude and so much, you know, appreciation that I came, that I did so much for him. And I mean, he really made you feel, you know, like, first of all, you know, you don't, he would never have to say that. And then, you know, you feel like what you did was so inadequate and so, you know, bungling, you know, you miss it. But he was acting as if, you know, I'd saved the world. You know how he could, with so much appreciation and love, and it was filled with, you know, actual love, and you could feel that. But before I'd walked in there, I was kind of thinking, well, you know, maybe I'll have some reprieve. We'll be going back to the States. But when, after he gets done talking like this for like 3 or 4 minutes, then he says, "Well, Gopal," and he has this big smile, and he says, "So what do you think? Do you like it here? Where do you like it better, here or on the farm?" What do you say? If you say, you know, what could you say? So, of course, you know, I took a big gulp. And I said,
"Oh, I love Hong Kong, Srila Gurudev."
That's what I said. I said, "I like it here with you, Srila Gurudev." And he had this big smile. He goes, "Don't worry, Gopal, I'll get you back."
Yeah, sure. I mean, yes.
This is, it's kind of a pastime related thing. When I first became a devotee, and I think it was the first Vyasa Puja I went to, or maybe the second one, and I wanted to touch Gurudev's lotus feet, but I never did. I never got a chance to, but I was always thinking about it. I want to touch his feet. I want to touch his feet. So at Vyasa Puja in Houston in Goronga Hall, Gurudev was on the Vyasasan, and we went through, you know, offerings and everything. And then there was Pushpanjali. Then there was Kirtan. And Gurudev was there when they offered arti to him. And then we all got to go up and offer flowers to him. But devotees were getting real close and putting the flowers like right in his lap, on his feet. And I came up and I sort of did the same thing. And I just something moved my hand. It wasn't me. Right down to his feet, so I could touch his feet. It was like a force moved my hand to touch his foot. And I was like, wow, what happened? And then I was happy. I said, I got to touch his feet. I touched his feet. And then the last time I ever saw him was in Houston. Or no, it was in Dallas at the airport. And I had flown with Srila Gurudev from Denver, where we'd been at the American Academy of Religions. And Srila Gurudev just stayed in the airport. He didn't come out. He just stayed there and took a connecting flight to Houston. So I was the only one there. I got to get off the plane from Denver, wait with Gurudev for his flight to Houston. And it was really sweet. He was making jokes and being very sweet. I don't think you were. You can. It turned out to be, that would be the last time I'd see my Guru Maharaj. And that was because he didn't come back to Dallas, and then he went to back to Cambridge, and he went to Mayapur, and he left. So when he was leaving, I remember we said goodbyes, and then he got real grave. And he, as he was going in line, I said goodbye, Srila Gurudev, you know, but I didn't offer my obeisances. Because I'd heard in the airports he didn't want us to offer obeisances in public. Mm-hmm. But all my devotional life, I always said, I don't care about that. I did it anyway. Mm-hmm. I always offered obeisances to him in public, in the mm-hmm. restaurant, you know, in college changes. I didn't care. Wherever I was, mm-hmm. I offered obeisances. But for some reason, that last time, I didn't do it. And I also wanted to touch his feet then. And I thought about asking him. Because we'd just done service. We'd had this Denver thing and all that. But I didn't ask him. And so I didn't offer obeisances, and I just stood there watching him go, and I thought, he'll turn and look back, he'll turn and look back. And he never turned to look back. He just got on the plane. So I thought, oh gosh, I didn't offer my obeisances. I really blew it. You know, I missed a chance. And then he left, you know. And luckily I got an email from him, though, before that, and he cleared my whole life up in 4 sentences, you know, everything. So thank goodness for that. But I still feel bad to this day that somehow or other I didn't, you know, my last chance, you know, to touch his feet and offer my obeisances, and I just stood there thinking, oh, well, now I won't because we're in public. You know, it's stupid.
Is that a question?
Yeah, I guess my question is, no. I don't know if I could formulate it. My question is, I guess I'm seeking solace. I don't know. Do you feel it's an offense? Was it?
If you're asking, was it offensive for you not to?
Yeah.
To adhere to his preference that devotees not offer obeisances in the airport, I would say no. That should not be an offense. If you feel remorse in your heart for having not disregarded that as you always did and do and have. And not having done what your spirit was prompting you to do, then I just say, do it in your heart. Manasa obeisances. I think he can get it.
I was writing to him in March or February of 2002, and I thought, I just want to be very loving, because always my letters were this problem, that laundry list, this thing, that thing, and he would have to answer so many things. And in this note, I just want to express my love, and I don't want any strings attached, nothing. And then my other goal was to be the shortest note I have ever written. So in 2 sentences, I just said, I love you and I miss you. And that's it. You know, I offered my obeisances and said those 2 things. And that was it. And he wrote back, and I still have the note. And he said, and I, you. So he said, and I, you. And I, you.
I got to touch Srila Gurudev's feet. I was in India. I was in Mayapur, and I had just been to a palmist. The palmist, he looked at my hand, and he said, oh, you have a very large mound of Jupiter, which means your guru is very powerful, and he can help you a lot. You have to touch his feet whenever you can. And I said, oh, well, I have his shoes, but I could never. He wouldn't let me. And he said, no, you have to beg him. You have to beg him. This is what you have to do. And so the same day, I went for a darshan with Gurudev. So I told him the story. I said, Srila Gurudev, I was just with the palmist. And Gurudev immediately started to stop me. He said, oh, we don't care about you. We don't pay too much attention to those things. And he said, well, it was about you. And so he said, okay, I'll listen.
And I said, well, if it's about me, let's hear it.
So I said, well, this palmist, he told me that my mound of Jupiter was very pronounced, and that meant that my guru was very powerful, and he could help me a lot, and I had to touch his feet. And he said, I don't know about this. That sounds like a trick. You're very tricky. And he was, Dhanadhara Maharaj was there, and he says, what do you think? Do you believe this story? And he says, I don't know, Srila Gurudev. And I said, and then Gurudev said, well, you know, you have my shoes now because I got them from the Sankirtan prize. And I said, I told him I have your shoes, and he said, that's not enough. I have to actually touch your feet. And he said, well, we don't usually do that. And I said, he told me to beg. And then so he started to laugh, and he says, I don't know. And he asked Dhanadhara Maharaj, okay, what should I do? And he says, oh, I think you should do it, Gurudev. So he said, okay, you have to come under the table, because there was this table there, and he had his feet out under there. So I climbed under the table, and I took his head, my hands under his feet, and I put my head on his feet, and I felt all the electricity that you were talking about earlier, the electric shock, and it was just the absolute highest moment of my life. It was the real high point. I had just had several things that I thought were the highest point of my life. Nothing could top it. You know, going all the way around Govardhan Hill and then bathing in Radhakund. I said, this is the highest thing. Nothing can top it. And then after that, it was the Navadvipa Parikrama, and Gurudev was there. And I said, this is it. Nothing in my life will ever touch this. And then just then, I got to touch his feet and still it was topped it. It was really sweet. And then he told me, now, don't go back to Dallas and spread this all around. I don't want everyone to try it, which I've just done now. That was a funny story.
I have one touching story.
I never got to touch Srila Gurudev's lotus feet, and I was meeting with him in 1995, and I was changing my service, and it was very emotional, darshan. And so I thought, you know, I've never put my head on his lotus feet. So I determined, I got down on all fours and I ran forward and I put my head and I said his pranam mantra out loud. And he rolled up a newspaper. He found a newspaper and he said, now you stop that. Now you stop that. Just like that. And he was hitting me on the head with the newspaper. Okay, thank you.
I just want to say one thing about touching lotus feet. I am touched by your stories and how you hankered and executed your desire in that way. And Gurudev reciprocated, even though he was pretending to chastise you with a newspaper. I had the extraordinary experience of touching his lotus feet every day. Because when I was the pujari for Gopinath, and also at other times when I was traveling with him, he would allow me to awaken him. There's a particular mantra for chanting to awaken the guru and to touch the guru's lotus feet and awaken him. So I had a lot of lotus feet touching, but it was spectacular. I mean, it was remarkable every time. It was sweet and special every time. I'm feeling that if anyone else wants to talk, they should sit on the Vyasasana and talk. Is that, how would that be? Just kind of, no? Just kind of rotate?
No, I have a quick addendum to the touching feet thing.
I'm going to tell one quick story. Okay. While I'm at the mic. I remember once I was sitting in the temple room, and I used to do shopping for Srila Gurudev. I'd go out and buy things for him, and I bought him some socks. And so I'm sitting, and I'm chanting, and I got my eyes closed, and all of a sudden somebody kind of kicks my leg. And I thought, well, it's just somebody walked by, and they happened to hit me. You know, I didn't open my eyes. And all of a sudden they kicked me again, and I thought, who is that? And I was a little angry, and I looked up, and it was Srila Gurudev. He was kicking me. And And he said, Maternath, he said, these socks you bought me, he said, look at them. And they got holes in them. And he, sure enough, on the bottom, there was like a hole. And he said, feel of it. And I thought, oh, wow, okay. I'll have to ask me twice. And so I got to, you know, I got to rub his feet, you know, and it was like, yeah, it was amazing. And then another time, Srila Gurudev was getting ready to go to China. And to do that, he had to actually grow hair, you know. And so he had to cut his sikha off. And he told me he was going to be cutting his sikha off. And so I said, when I heard that, I said, Srila Gurudev, wow, could I have your sikha when you cut it off? And he looked at me and just gave me, like, he just looked right through me and didn't say a word. And I thought, geez, I've committed a big offense. So, you know, I shouldn't have asked for that. And I was really lamenting. I was worried I committed offense. And he left. And about, oh, I guess 2 weeks later, I got this package in the mail. And I started feeling it. And I thought, oh, this can't be. And I opened it up. And sure enough, it was a sikha. And there was a note in there. And he said, you were the only one that asked. Hmm. So it was, I still
wow,
have
great.
That sikha. Yeah, to this
that's
day.
Far out. That's marvelous. I'm sure. I still have the first thread that he gave me when he gave me second initiation.
When Srila Gurudev celebrated Vyas Puja in England, near the manor at Shamlashaki's house, and it was real intimate and small. There weren't a lot of devotees, and so I was pushing myself in and trying to do a lot of things, and I was being let do some things. So I somehow finagled. I got the chance to be the foot washer and wash Srila Gurudev's lotus feet for Vyas Puja. I mean, that's a big deal, but I managed to get a chance to do it. And I thought, okay, as soon as I get down there and I touch his feet to put him in the bathing tray, I'm going to take his feet and put them to my forehead. Because that's a big deal. You know, not only touching the feet, but I wanted them on my head. You know, I want them on my forehead. And I was so nervous when I started to do that. Another devotee came to help me because I was just so nervous. And I totally forgot. I totally forgot to put his feet to my forehead. And then we got done and we're drying his lotus feet. And then once again, some force. My hands went down and my head went down and I touched my forehead. Lifted his feet up just a tiny bit, but something made my head go down. I forgot. But something had, Gurudev remembered. And he said, oh, you get to do that now. I wanted you. So it was like a force. And I thought, wow, that's the second time that's happened. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really amazing.
I remember when Srila Gurudev was having his operations, we would have to go back and forth to the doctors and to the hospitals and everything, and it was tough times, you know, because he very rarely got sick. I mean, he may have gotten a cold a few times or something, but Srila Gurudev was never sick, you know, and so. You know, we were all worried about him, but when we were in the car, we'd be driving, and he would always ask me and ask the different devotees that are in the car, so what realizations have you gotten from this? You know, he's still teaching us, even in his illness and everything, and he's teaching us, and he's worried about us. He would ask me, so how are the devotees doing? How's this devotee doing? And he said, when he was in the hospital, he said that he didn't really want devotees to come and see him in the hospital. And, Mother Lakshmi Priya, I guess she just left, but she was the one, she came anyway. She came in, and even though he had told the devotees not to do it, he really appreciated the fact that she just, well, I've got to see Srila Gurudev, you know. But he was also one of the most competitive persons I've ever seen in my life, or the most competitive,
oh,
without
yes.
a doubt. Yeah. And so, even though when he had that operation, he asked the doctor, he said, how long does it normally take for, you know, people to stay in the hospital? What's a normal stay? And they said, it's usually 4 to 5 days that you have to stay. And the doctor said, but when I had my same operation, he said, I was out in 3 days. He said, no one's ever done that before. But I knew when he said that, oh, Srila Gurudev said, he's going to be out of here in 3 days, you know. So sure enough, when that day came, he wanted to get out of that hospital, you know, and he was just, I mean, everything he did was, he was doing it for Srila Prabhupada, and he wanted to be the best at it, and he always was, you know. I remember driving from the farm, you know, he would say, what's the fastest time anybody's ever driven from the farm to Dallas? And I'd say, oh, probably, you know, 3 hours. So, you know, he does it in 2.5 hours or something, you know. Mm-hmm. So he is a very, very competitive person. I'll tell one little mystical power story. That's Srila Gurudev. We were in Houston, in Galveston, actually, staying on the beach there. And so Srila Gurudev got a call that he needed to be in New York the next day. It was some big emergency. So he told Jivananda Prabhu, go make me a reservation. So Jivananda called, and I don't know, every airline, especially, he wanted to go on, he wanted a direct flight, so he was trying, I guess it was American, so he called, and the lady said, we're packed, we're completely, no, he wanted to change his reservation, I'm sorry, he had a reservation, he wanted to change it. So she said, no, we're full, completely weekend. So he came back and told Srila Gurudev, I'm sorry, they're full, and he said, no, you didn't understand. He said, go back and call them and tell them that I want to get on that flight. So he, Jivananda went back, there's a phone booth, and he called, and he got the same lady again, you know, and she said, sir, I told you earlier that the flight's completely full. You cannot, you, no one can get on this. You know, we got people standby waiting, you know. So he, Jivananda came to me and said, what do I do? You know, he said, Srila Gurudev's telling. I said, just tell him it's full, you know. So he goes back and tells Srila Gurudev, and he said, no, you don't understand. You got to have faith in the guru. Go and call again. So Jivananda went and called again. He got the same lady again. And she said, sir, I told you. Wait a minute. We just had a cancellation. What was his name again? And he booked the flight. And Jivananda came back. And when he did, Srila Gurudev just smiled that big smile. And he said, see, have faith in the guru, you know. So have faith in the guru's instruction, you know. So we were all just like amazed, you know, that Srila Gurudev knew it all the time. You know, he just was teaching us all, you know. So.
Right. Yeah, I heard about that story.
Yeah, the clamp was left inside of him. Mm-hmm. He was so tolerant. And they finally found it after he ran, what, 100 and something fever? Or,
You know, I don't know if this is mystic power, but it's, you know, the connection between the spiritual master and the disciple. You know, this is something I think I wrote this in the Vyas Puja offering this year, but it's when I was on when I was living on the farm in Oklahoma, I had written a letter to Srila Gurudev and talking about the affairs of the farm, and then I spent, you know, half of the letter, the majority of it, glorifying his service to Srila Prabhupada, and especially in particular his personal service to him physically and like that. And I really, you know, I really hankered to have an opportunity, because at that point in time, from what I know, I don't think hardly any disciples at all had any opportunities to serve Gurudev personally. Because, you know, when he first was initiating, usually he was always surrounded by his god brothers. And so, you know, I had very little, and I mean, had no opportunity really at that, up till then. So I wrote a letter, and I glorified the way he had served Prabhupada, and then I mentioned how, and he was in Hong Kong at that time, I was in Oklahoma, and I mentioned how, you know, I hankered for an opportunity also to serve him as he did Srila Prabhupada. And I put it in the mailbox that afternoon, 5 o'clock, rural Oklahoma. The next morning at 8 in the morning, he called me from Hong Kong to ask if I would come and serve him.
Yeah, I would call that mystic power.
So, yeah, that was, that blew my mind. That really blew. And, yeah, and he made it a point to, when I got to Hong Kong also to, you know, just made it a point that I understood this is the connection, and, you know, this is... So I always valued that tremendously, because that was early on in my Krishna consciousness, and it validated the that type of a connection, that I knew that whenever you're thinking of or praying to or, you know, in any... trying to connect with your spiritual master, it's, you know, there's no reason to expect that it's not happening. You know, sometimes we get befuddled by the time and space, But I mean, that in itself was, you know, proof. And he was 2 o'clock in the morning when I arrived in Hong Kong 2 weeks later, and he had the devotee, when I got off there, bring me to his room, and he was lying in bed already sleeping, but he wanted me to come to his room immediately just so he could make that point that you understand that, you know, this is exactly what you wanted. You know, you wrote it in a letter. I hadn't gotten the letter yet. By the connection, I was able to call you and bring you here. So I thought that was pretty fantastic. And
you know, oftentimes, because of Srila Gurudev's perfect service to Srila Prabhupada, perfect is a funny word, but sure, there are histories where Srila Prabhupada was displeased with Srila Gurudev and chastised him in various ways and so on. But basically, Srila Gurudev's consistent, unrelenting, absolutely surrendered service to Srila Prabhupada, whenever I would leave Srila Gurudev's service, I would feel inadequate and foolish and spiritually stupid. But nevertheless, I was asking, you know, to be released. And so I never was able to live up to the example that he set for service to his spiritual master. But I will just conclude by saying I am eternally grateful for the opportunities, the repeated opportunities he provided me to enter into his service and to feel the heat, to get in the kitchen, to get my forehead hot and my nose burned and my fingers, you know, scorched, and also to feel the sweetest nectar of some times occasionally doing something pleasing to him that filled me with a bliss so overflowing that it brought me to tears on more than one occasion. And I'm grateful that I have all of you as my godbrothers, because, you know, I had a second initiation from Srila Gurudev, that therefore I have two sets of godbrothers and godsisters, and I consider that to be an extremely wonderful blessing on my life. And so, Jai Srila Prabhupada, Jai Srila Gurudev.
Did they, Srila Gurudev actually left
And so we, you know, we all spoke, and then the next night we decided to do just what we did here tonight. And it gave us so much solace. It just was such nice healing for us, you know, to be able to just talk about Srila Gurudev, fun times, you know. And anyway, I want to just take the opportunity to thank you for inspiring us to be able to do this again. So thank you, Prabhu.
Well, Prabhu, Maitreyanath Prabhu and Gopal and all of you who spoke, I want to say my profound thank you to you all, both Prabhupada disciples and Tamalkrishna Goswami disciples, who have sustained your devotional service more regularly than I. I've been in and out and around the fringes of ISKCON since 1969. And I appreciate your making me welcome, even though I'm such a blooper. I really, really love you all. Aloha.
Howdy, just
I
one.
I can touch yours. That's my just business. Yes.
One experience that I've had recently, I've lamented that my spiritual master Tamal Krishna Goswami does not come to me since his departure. He doesn't come to me in my dreams as I've heard some devotees say he does. And I've wondered about that, although I knew the reason. It's just lack of purity of heart. But about a year and a half ago, His Holiness Giriraj Swami said to me, Rupa Nagadas, he said, you should go to China and give some association to the young people there. And I said, okay. And I didn't give it any more thought. So a few months later, he was back in Dallas again. And he says, so Rupanuga, how are the plans going for China? I said, oh, Maharaj, I completely forgot about it. He said, you forgot about it? He said, that was an order. And his relationship with me heretofore had been just very casual and informal. He's always made me feel as though I were almost like a godbrother to him. And as a matter of fact, whenever I'd offer obeisances, he would offer obeisances. But I finally had to tell him, Maharaj, this is not a proper thing for you to do. So anyhow, after that time, after he told me this is an order, or that was an order, I thought, he hasn't put himself in the position of giving me orders in the past. And this time, it was, even though he had a smile on his face when he said it, it was very clear that that's exactly what he wanted me to do. And so I mused on that, and I thought, well, this must be coming from our Guru Maharaj. If he's not coming to me personally, well, then at least he's coming to me through a person that I can consider my Shiksha Guru. So then I began making plans, and I thought, this will never happen. I'm not a traveler. I rarely leave Dallas. And yet he's asking me to go to China, of all places. And then I suddenly felt myself feeling like in the position of my Guru Maharaj whenever Srila Prabhupada told him to go to China. You know, he had came up with arguments why it was not a practical thing or something. And then finally I submitted to it, and I began to think about all the obstacles that would be there. And how, you know, I don't sleep very well at night. What would I do about that? I got aches in my back and my legs, and you know, how am I, and what am I going to do for food? And when I get there, am I going to have somebody who greets me at the airport who speaks English? Like I did not have when I went to India for the first time. Mm-hmm. So I, all these things kept coming to my mind. And finally, I thought, Krishna, you're just going to take care of it. Because I don't know how. I'm just going to go there, and whatever happens, happens. And I began to feel a little peacefulness from that. Because I felt like this was in the mood of Srila Prabhupada, that when he came to this country, you know, I don't know, my Lord, why you have sent me here. So the feeling that the guru has will never come and visit me, he'll never come and see me, was a little bit refuted by the fact that he sent his godbrother to give me that instruction. Srila Gurudev ki jai.
Jai.